Burns and Gambo. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. This is the Suns Front Office Show, presented by National Bank of Arizona, the only bank you need, and brought to you by Coors Light. This season, we climb, proud partner of the Phoenix Suns.
Scheduled to have the general manager of the show, James Jones, on the program. Sure, he'll be calling in here in a moment or two as the Suns lose last night to the Minnesota Timberwolves 118-91. It's a busy day for the organization. Of course, last night, Devin Booker ejected. Today, the vote from the Phoenix City Council on the arena. And, of course, the trade deadline, which is only a handful or so of days away, and a potentially big fish added to the pond yesterday with the news breaking that the Memphis Grizzlies might be in the market to trade both Marc Gasol and Mike Conley. Now, I know that news broke about an hour to go in our show yesterday, the Mike Conley news in particular, and you and I both at the time thought that might be a name worth pursuing.
Listen, there's been a lot of names that aren't worth pursuing. Mike Conley, there are positives and negatives. I mean, his age doesn't really match up to the timeline that they're building, but there's a time when you got to go get some winners to play for this organization. Conley's been a winner. I don't know that there'll be a lot of takers for him. He's got 2 years and $67 million left on his contract. I mean, that's a lot of money. He's had a major Achilles injury that could play a factor as far as, you know, keeping him long term. I know he's said in the past, if he has another injury like that, he might be done. But if Memphis is willing to deal him, they're giving up on the season. This is a guy that some teams that need a point guard have to look at if you're in a position. Now, the Suns, because they need a point guard, every time any name comes up, Dennis Smith Jr., Frank Ntilikina, any name at all, they're going to be tied to it because they're so, what people believe, is very desperate to go get themselves a point guard.
He would be so expensive financially. And believe me,
it's a max contract he's on.
It's a lot of money that he's going to make, and the injury history, there's no doubt that's going to cause concern. Another part of this, too, and I know you and I were talking about this yesterday, on or off the air, I can't remember, in letting Ariza go and letting Tyson Chandler go, just finding the dollars to add up to send back, right?
Well, I've always thought that, if your plan was to go get a player like this year, then letting go of Tyson Chandler and Austin Rivers was not very smart. Like those, now this organization has had a tough time, with players and their respect for the organization. So I think what they're trying to do is do the right thing by the players now. But that's not the best business decision. Because right now, you've got to come within 25% of his contract this year, which is like $30 million. So to make a trade for him, you've got to come within 25%. You don't have to match it dollar for dollar, but you got to get between. So you've got to find a way to get $22 million, $23 million in a contract. They're not going to want back Ryan Anderson if you traded for him. So that is the one negative with not having Austin Rivers or not having Tyson, is not having that expiring contract if you did want to make a deal.
Joining us right now on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line, as expected, as promised, the interim general manager of the Phoenix Suns, James Jones, here on the Burns and Gambo Show. James, how are you today?
I'm good, guys. How's it going?
Well, we appreciate you coming on. We're good. Trade deadline coming up. Tell me how discussions are going with other teams, how active you've been when it comes to other teams.
I mean, we're, as usual, saying, you know, we're doing our business, talking to the teams out there, seeing what opportunities may present themselves and just getting the lay of the land. But, you know, we're not pressing to do anything. We're just going to try to see what we have on the table. And when the trade deadline rolls around, if there's something to be done, we'll do it.
And I'm encouraged by that, to be honest with you. And I'm encouraged by you not panicking. And that's where teams make a lot of decisions, when they panic, when they rush to judgment, when they feel like I've got to do something for the sake of doing it. I've seen many teams do that, many organizations do that, and usually it's the wrong move. I mean, wait, be patient. The right move will come eventually, but, you know, it's very difficult because the team is struggling. It's been struggling for years. You want to try to rectify that, but there's a lot more bad moves that are out there than there are good moves. Would you agree?
I agree. I mean, I think if you do something because you feel pressure, you do something short-sighted, it always ends up coming to bite you in the end. And so, you know, the reason a lot of these players are available is because their teams don't think they fit long-term. Your teams think that those guys are declining in value. And so they'll try to push them upon you. And if you're desperate and they know that's something that you need, they're hopeful that they can kind of trick you into setting yourself up for, you know, short-term success, but long-term failure.
Right. And that's what you get when you start looking at players that are 31, 32 years old. Yeah, short-term success, yeah, but long-term failure, possibly. Do you feel it's more likely that you'll add pieces to this roster via trade, free agency, or draft?
I think most likely free agency and draft. They're you know, a lot of the teams that have the quality players, they're going for it. And they're, you know, this league, this NBA landscape is different. You have a couple teams up top like Golden State who, you know, they still have the pieces, but at times they look vulnerable. And then you have teams down at the in the mix like the Portlands. You know, you have the teams like Denver that are kind of surging and they're right there. But depending on the moves they make, you know, they could either be in it this year and next year and then be completely out of it in 24 months. So with that type of landscape, with operating that type of landscape, is very, very hard to project or to say that we'll be able to add a player that fits with us long term via trades. It's just not, you know, it's just not something teams are looking to do, where they're looking to get rid of good players and help us grow.
Yeah, and listen, we all want to see this team improve and get better, and you know, we could see that there are a lot of really good pieces in place right now for the future. My history of watching this league, your history of playing in this league, it's very rare that you see a player, you know, from age 32 to 35 or 32 to 36, you know, get better, and usually that's when the decline starts. Is that what you've noticed over the years? Do you have to be somewhat reluctant to go after older players because of the fact that they're very likely declining?
Of course, especially when you factor in that the speed and pace of the game is increased. So the elite players, you know, there are very few of those guys between the ages of 32 to 35 that maintain a high level and really take a jump. For the most part, our team is all under 20. They're all under 22. So if you try to add someone that's 33, 34 years old with a 22-year-old, it usually just doesn't work. There's too big of a gap. So we're focused on adding veterans, but just not the veterans that are at that declining point.
James Jones, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Does your organization have an issue that needs to be addressed when it comes to how your players deal with referees and conflict on the floor based off of what we've seen in two of the last three games?
Yes, we do. You know, that's something that we've been adamant, I mean, that we stress to our guys is, you know, it's tough. Winning in this league is tough. And when you're competing, sometimes you get a good whistle, other times you don't. But our job is to compete and to compete at a high level with integrity and to move on to the next play. And I do believe that we get a bad whistle sometimes, but if you look at it on balance, we get some favorable calls too. So it's more on us to be focused, to persevere, to compete, and to take these victories. You know, we can't rely on the referees or the flow of the game to dictate how we compete.
Was Devin Booker lacking in that focus last night? Is that something you need to have a conversation with him about based off of what happened last night?
It's an ongoing conversation with Devin. You know, he understands that, you know, there's a greater level of expectation, you know, as he continues to grow and to take, as he takes this leadership position with the team. I wish it could have been handled differently, but this is an emotional game, and sometimes your emotions get the best of you. But if you ask him, he understands. He's just ultra competitive. He has a lot of room for growth, and we'll keep pushing him to just do things the right way.
James, I was at the game last night in the locker room afterwards. How difficult is it to be a leader of an entire organization at that age?
Oh, it's extremely difficult. You know, it's not uncommon for young guys to struggle. You know, struggle figuring out how to perform on the floor and also take on that pressure, that burden of leading your team, of basically being the face of the city. But that's something that Devin relishes, and I truly believe if you look at his basketball talent, it'll make it easier for him to be a leader for this organization and for his teammates, because the object of the game of basketball is to put the ball in the basket. He can do it just as good as anyone else, And so when you can do that, guys will follow you.
You know, Kyrie, some people criticized him. I don't know why, when he made the phone call to LeBron just to say, hey, you know, I want to apologize. I kind of recognize what you had to go through to be the leader of an organization. You know, I thought that was an example for Devin to look at, too. I mean, look at Kyrie, you know, realizing now at his age, man, it's hard. Like, it is a very difficult thing to do, to be the leader, to be the best player, to be able to give it your all every single night, night in, night out. You know, only few players have been able to do it. You know, you look at Kobe, you look at LeBron, and there's been others. But, I mean, it just shows you with what Kyrie said, you know, in calling LeBron, just how difficult it is.
Well, you don't call those guys greats for nothing. You know, they do something that's extremely difficult, which is compete at a high level and do it consistently, despite all the challenges. And so Kyrie, he's right. You know, you don't really know how tough it is until you go through it. And our guys are going through it right now, but I think, you know, our situation will make Devin better. He knows it. It will make him tougher. And at the end of this thing, he'll be the leader that we all know he's capable of being and that he expects himself to be.
James, as always, we appreciate the time. Thanks for coming on. We'll talk to you next week, okay?
Oh, you got it. Thanks, guys.
James Jones, general manager, interim general manager of the Suns, joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line, CoulterTempe.com, Coulter on Camelback.com, and CoulterNissan.com. According to those covering the event on Twitter, the Suns portion of the discussion at the Phoenix City Council meeting is underway and has begun. Now, there's still public comment that's allowed to take place at this point. Don't know how long this is going to take before a vote is going to be taken on the renovations of the arena, but I assure you, we are following that story very, very closely. And as soon as we have information about whether the vote goes through or when it goes through, we will pass that along, because obviously that's a major story today. But the Suns portion of the conversation has just begun for the Phoenix City Council.
Yep, and we should know soon, hopefully, whether they get that arena deal done or not.
Larry Fitzgerald is coming back for another season. How could his return affect the rest of this offseason? It's kind of a tricky question. We'll try to answer it next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Boy, real quick note, for anybody who was listening, we'll talk about Fitz in just a second, because obviously that's the top story of the day, Fitz deciding to come back. For anybody who was listening to our interview there with James Jones, now understand, we could have asked him point blank about Mike Conley, but he's not allowed to talk about Mike Conley.
No,
he's under
contract.
It's tampering. He never would have answered the question. But the way you deftly asked him questions about older players, I mean, Mike Conley's going to be 32 years old later this year, right? I mean,
yes.
I think it's sometime this year he turns 32.
He'll be 32 this year.
The way you kind of deftly asked him those questions about older players, I got the impression from James that Mike Conley might not exactly be on the Suns' to-do list if he is going to be traded from Memphis.
No, listen, that's the questions were all slanted towards, what do you think of Mike Conley, without saying, what do you think of Mike Conley? There's only been one player in my lifetime that I saw get better after age 32, and that was Steve Nash.
Yep.
I mean, that's it. The only player in my lifetime that I've seen improve at that, and that was, you know, first player in the history to ever do that. Had his best years between age 32 and 36. I mean, it's unreal what Nash was able to do. I don't get the feeling that, you know, Conley, with his age and injury history and what you'd have to give up for him, may be a play for James Jones. Now, I'm torn, because, like, I'm frustrated too, and I want them to get better. And I like Conley. He's a fantastic player. Will he make you better? Sure. He'll make you better. You're not going to win a championship, but he'll make you better.
Yeah.
And they do need to add some winners on this team. So I am torn about the Conley thing. I really am. But I understand them if they're not going to go after it and wait for free agency instead.
We'll circle back to that news, because I did think there was some revealing comments by James Jones in that conversation. We're waiting on the arena vote. No word yet from the Phoenix City Council meeting when it comes to the renovation plan for the Phoenix Suns. As soon as we know something, I promise you, breaking news, we'll jump in and tell you exactly what's going on. The breaking news this morning is that Larry Fitzgerald is back for his 16th season in the NFL. And now the question, without knowing the dollars attached, and I think we can probably take a guess at the dollars attached based off of these. And by the way, this is the third straight year now Fitz has negotiated his own deal, the third straight contract. Fitz
save on those agent fees.
Well, his agent passed away. Eugene Parker was
never,
his agent.
That's right.
Never hired another one.
Did it all himself.
He did this all himself. We kept talking about, okay, here's a team, $65 to $70 million in cap space, $65 to $70 million in cap space. Well, not anymore. And I'm not for a second suggesting it wasn't worth it, but how does this news in spending, let's say, $12 million on Larry Fitzgerald, how does this now change the offseason plans, if at all, of the Cards and how they're going to spend what's left of that money?
I don't think it affects it at all. I still think, like, you're going to go, you need a left guard, you need a right tackle, you need a cornerback, you need a wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
You've got free agency, you've got the draft, you've got money to spend on, and you still because Larry Fitzgerald comes back, you don't, like, scratch off wide receiver. No, we don't need a wide receiver.
No, but you still
need a wide receiver.
But does it change the amount you're willing to spend on a wide receiver? Does it change the amount of dollars you've allocated towards spending on a wide receiver and say, well, okay, we could have gotten this type of wide receiver at this price range?
If you were signing a guy on a one-year deal, but if you're going to sign somebody to a 3 or 4 year deal, I would say no. I don't think Fitz's one-year deal affects somebody you want to sign for multiple years. I don't. Now, if you had signed Fitz to a four-year deal, well, then that's different. But there's no dead money on the cap or anything. If you sign, like, next year, it just goes away. So if you do sign a wide receiver to a three-year deal, you know, I don't think that affects you. I don't think, because Fitz is only on a one-year deal.
I'm not suggesting for a second that they're not. Of course, they're going to go sign a wide receiver. They'd be crazy not to sign a wide receiver when free agency begins. I just don't know if this, and I think it might a little change how good a wide receiver they're going to be able to afford, because they just spent 11 or 12. Like, whoever the top free agent on the market is going to be, the kid from San Diego, the kid from the Los Angeles Chargers, Tyrell
Williams.
Golden Tate. I mean, look, there aren't a ton of great wide receivers out there anyway.
No, so there's nobody. There is no Julio Jones. You could trade for Antonio Brown. Okay, that's big money. Okay,
sure.
But the wide receivers that are available in free agency are not likely to fetch the type of money that the top receivers in the past, whether it was Dez Bryant or Julio Jones or Antonio Brown, have gotten. So I don't think there is a guy out there that's a bank breaker. I understand your point about allocating a certain amount of money to wide receivers, and there was a time when they could not afford both Fitz and Anquan Boldin, because
right,
they were both at that point where they were both making big money. But Christian Kirk doesn't make a lot of money. J.J. Nelson should be gone. I mean, you don't have anything else. And it's not like Fitz is on a contract in which he's got $40 million guaranteed. He's going to have a one-year deal for $10 million,
yeah,
probably.
Yeah, no, it's not going to chew up. It's not going to chew up a debilitating amount of space. But it's less money that you have to use. I just pulled up the preliminary ESPN ranking of the top 50 free agents available this offseason. The first wide receiver mentioned was Tyrell Williams from the LA Chargers. He came in at number 20. Scrolling down, Devin Funchess was number 27. John Brown was number 33 among the wide receivers. Adam Humphries was number 35 from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Golden Tate was number 36 of the top 50. I think there was one more as I'm scrolling down. Yeah, Dante Moncrief from Jacksonville was number 48. Those were considered kind of the top of the wide receiver lists in the overall list for ESPN when looking at the free agents.
Yeah, and I don't think, like I said, I don't think any of those guys are bank-breaking type players. I think you're just trying to, you know, get a piece in here. Maybe you do a one-year deal with some of those. A lot of those guys are one-year deals. You'll see a lot of those guys will just get one-year deals because they're not that great. And the class isn't great. I mean, unless you made a trade or you tried to do something with to try to get Antonio Brown here, well, then that would cost you a lot of money. That would take up a lot of your cap space. His contract is silly crazy. I wouldn't rule out Antonio Brown.
Right.
But that is now all of a sudden you've got a lot of your money tied up into one guy in Antonio.
UFC Fight Night coming to Talking Stick Resort Arena on Sunday, February 17th. We are giving you the chance to win tickets. Head to the rewards page at arizonasports.com for complete details and to enter. They keep losing players to injuries, and yet they continue to win games. Well, how are they doing it? We'll ask their head coach, Rick Tockett, that question of the Coyotes. He'll join us next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. The head coach of your Arizona Coyotes, Rick Tockett, with Burns and Gambo.
The Burns and Gambo Show on this Wednesday afternoon here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. And as we do every Wednesday at 3:30, we check in with the head coach. The Arizona Coyotes, so far, very successful road trip. They've won the first two games, including last night in Ottawa by a score of 3-2. Tonight they've got Montreal, and joining us right now on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line, the head coach of the Coyotes, Rick Tocchet. How you doing, coach?
Guys, how are you?
The Eastern Canadian road trip. You got to love that, don't you?
It's cold. It's, you know, there's a lot of buzz. There's a lot of, you know, there's always a lot of people in the stands, and it's always fun to play in Canada, for sure.
Did you put on the skates and go down the Rideau Canal yesterday in Ottawa?
It was too cold, man. It was -8, which is, I don't know, what is it in Canada? It's like 20 degrees. It was freezing.
I've skated that canal. It's nice. Beautiful over there.
Well, you know what's fun about it? I've done it many times. You got all they have actually like chocolate stands. They have a couple like a place you can grab a beer.
Yeah,
people skate to work.
Let's get into that. I mean, what an unbelievable run that this team has been on. I mean, honestly, I really think you should be up for Coach of the Year with what you've been able to accomplish. And I'm not kidding. I'm not saying this. I mean, jokingly. I mean, what you are doing with so little. That game was fantastic last night, and you know, right from the get-go, I thought, you know, you guys set the tone. Archibald had that breakaway in the first period, shorthanded. I don't know how you guys come up with so many shorthanded breakaways. He didn't put it in, but I think it kind of set the tone, and then, you know, right from the get-go, you could just tell it. Hinnes Stroza just had his stride going last night. I mean, that was a great first goal by him and a great second goal by him, and he really gave you guys a lift.
Yeah, the line in general, Gamble, were great. Step, Panic, and Hinnes Stroza. Anytime Ottawa made some pushes, and obviously they made some pushes, that line kind of regained momentum. Obviously getting three goals for us was huge. But anyway, you know, we got killed on the center ice dive on faceoffs. I think we're only one about 30-something percent. So that was really hampering us. So I had to try to get Step line out there, and somehow they regained momentum for us while we were going through the tough stretches to the dots.
Well, I like to see more than anything is when you guys take advantage of turnovers. I mean, Brady Tkachuk turns the puck over. Panic makes a great play to Hinnes Stroza. Beautiful behind-the-back pass. I mean, just knowing he was there. I mean, that was fantastic. And then, you know, honestly, the puck that Kanaan shot off the boards, I mean, Hinnes Stroza is just in great position to get the carom and put it in. I mean, you could shoot that puck 100 times, and the chance to get that carom perfectly right like that's not going to happen. I just think the give and go between Stepan and Panic for the third goal, I mean, that's a beautiful give and go. So I just thought you guys really just played that line. They played a really good game.
Yeah, if you remember the one where Kanaan shot off behind the net there, we've been actually practicing. If you watch Hinnes Stroza, he kind of wraps the puck to Kanaan, and then Panic comes high, Step goes to the kind of shot lane, and he goes back door. We've been practicing that, so I got to give that line a lot of credit. They're buying in. They're buying in. A lot of guys are buying in what we're trying to do here. You know, we're not, you know, like we don't have a team that scores a ton of goals, but we can manufacture some goals. So we've been trying different things in practice to try to manufacture something, and they took that play and was successful with it.
Now for the news that we have to talk about, and that's your captain leaving the game last night with the lower body injury. What is the latest that you know about Oliver Ekman-Larsson, and what are we looking at right now?
Well, he's going to go get an MRI tomorrow. You know, we're all nervously waiting. We'll know tomorrow. You know, he was a little sore today, walking around. And, you know, it's you know, we're obviously concerned about it. It's something that's, for whatever reason, it's this year we've been getting a lot of injuries, and getting old in this situation now is a tough one. We're hoping for the best. I hope it's not long. You know, we don't know until you take those MRIs and see, you know, what the prognosis is.
Are you preparing for the worst, that this could be where he's out for a good portion of the second half of the season because it is a knee injury?
I mean, you always prepare for the worst. Listen, we've dealt with many things coming our way. What else can you do? We got to hope for the best. If it does, man, next man up, we'll go from there. You know, we got a kid in the minors, cap of the ankle, who's, I guess he's having an incredible year this year. You know, he might be the next guy to get called up. And if that happens, so we can't get ahead of ourselves. We don't know, but sure. I mean, John Chuck is always going to prepare for that. We have a guy down the minors that we have to bring up.
Larson has not had, you know, a good year. He didn't have a good year last year. He came on strong at the second half, but he hasn't played that well this year. Is that a big loss for you? Do you think you have enough depth defensively to overcome him, losing him for a while?
I think him and Nick Schremelson, since we put them together, they've been really, really good the last month, shutting down the other team's best line. So, it's a big loss for sure. Him and Nick, absolutely, the last month. When we played them together, they've been really, really good.
Rick Tocchet, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show, as the Coyotes on the road tonight in Montreal. And then a long, long layoff for you guys with the All-Star break. How, for you, for them, how much do you guys need this right now?
Well, listen, Brad Richardson, we got a bunch of guys at home, so not playing games, it helps us, you know, to get these guys, you know, hopefully closer to the playing date, which I don't know at this point. And just for the players, you know, mentally rest. I think everybody here needs to get some rest mentally. I don't know, you know, physically, I think we're okay in the sense, you know, you rest a couple of days, and, you know, I think guys will start to work out again. But I think it's more a mental rest. Then you got 30-some-odd games left, and then the sprint continues. You know, this is where you got to try to get yourself some games in your belt where you can get ahead of some teams, because it's tough. It's going to be a tough stretch for us. The February schedule and March schedule isn't the greatest. It's a lot of games, not very many days off, so it's going to be a tough one again thrown our way.
All right, last one, Tak. I love to give guys credit when they make big plays. To me, I don't think there was any bigger play last night than the play Osterley made. We talk about Hinostroza, and we're talking about the Connaughton play, but I thought Osterley saved the game for you guys in front of that net, robbing them of a goal. I mean, just great defensive play, giving up the body. You know, that can't go unnoticed to me. That was just a fantastic defensive play by him.
Yeah, that's against Ottawa's best player. I mean, you know, 20-plus goal scorer, Stone, going to the net. Yeah, he just gave up his body. You know, the one thing that Ost has given us and our D has given us is that, you know, even though they got beat or there's a desperation play, they're diving, and, you know, Nick Schremelson does that all the time, diving, he got a stick on it. So, yeah, great play. It saved us from them tying the game.
Good luck tonight, Tak. We appreciate it. Enjoy the break.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Rick Tocchet joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. CoulterTempe.com, Coulter on Camelback.com, and CoulterNissan.com. There's been a lot going on today between Fitz and Booker and Mike Conley and the arena talk. There was also a report out of Los Angeles in the last 24 hours, 12 to 24 hours.
It's a doozy.
Suggesting that perhaps the reason why the Dodgers are looking to trade Jock Peterson is because the moment they do, they're going to add Diamondbacks, former Diamondbacks outfielder A.J. Pollock.
Yeah, reports have surfaced. Dodgers are interested in trading Jock Peterson and signing A.J. Just a swap of talent. Now, whether they can do that or not, you've got to... Peterson had a great season. He's a very talented young player. If they trade him, then they can make a move for A.J. Pollock. But obviously, they can't do anything unless they traded Jock Peterson. We'll see, because I don't, Peterson's 28 years old. He's entering the prime of his career. We'll see if he gets traded, if he gets traded or not. Nick Markakis re-signed with the Atlanta Braves yesterday, and that was a team we said, okay, that's a team. The Mets, the Braves, I think we looked at the Reds. There weren't a lot of options for A.J. There's a story in New York said that he initially wanted 4 years and $80 million. I am going to be fascinated to see what he gets on the open market. Fascinated to see what he ends up with. There just doesn't seem to be... Now, all it takes is one.
Sure.
But there doesn't seem to be a team out there willing to give him that big long-term contract that he wants.
I kind of think if there was going to be the one, that the one would have happened by now, right? The one to give him that big contract.
I think everybody else is looking for short-term deals, yep. Right? What do we say? The Mets want to give him a pillow contract.
Yeah, one-year deal so he can kind of bounce back into better value next year. I don't know if there's going to be better value to be had next year. We talked yesterday about Goldie and the reports out of St. Louis that they really want to get him signed long-term, with this being the last year of his contract there. And look, in years past, I think the standard operating procedure in baseball would be for Goldie to go, nope, I want to get to the end of the year, be a free agent.
Yeah, I want $150 million. That's what he's going to want.
That money has not been out there now for the last two off seasons in baseball. And if they come knocking on Goldie's door and they make him an offer that, you know what, I don't know if I'm going to be able to get that. when I'm a free agent. He might take it.
He might.
He might have to take it. I mean, they're watching what AJ's going through and Bryce Harper and Manny. Now, those guys are still going to make a ton of money. I don't want to cry poor over what those guys are going to make. But compared to what they were probably promised they would make, it can't even hold a candle to what they probably were promised they were going to make. By
J.D. Martinez got 5 years and $110 million. I mean, what's Paul Goldschmidt going to get? You know, with when you start to consider age and everything as a factor, I just don't know. It's going to be that's why if he gets a decent if the Cardinals offer him $100 million, take it. If they offer you the same deal J.D. Martinez signed, take it. 5 years, $110 million. Take it.
And don't take the chance that you won't get that a year from now when you're a free agent.
No, if the Cardinals offer him anything close to what J.D. Martinez got, he should jump at it.
The greatest show on grass returns to the TPC Scottsdale as the Waste Management Phoenix Open tees off on January 28th through February 3rd. Head to the rewards page at arizonasports.com for your chance to win tickets to this year's Open. Mike Conley is on the trade block. But reading between the lines, one has to wonder if the Suns are interested in Mike Conley. That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Over the last couple of years, there have been players whose names have come up, and we hold a debate publicly, privately. As Suns fans, do we want our organization to go after that player? We've had that debate about DeMarcus Cousins. We've had that debate about Kyrie Irving. We've had that debate about
LaMarcus Aldridge,
Kawhi Leonard. We talked about that for a little bit. Kevin Love, my God, that
Paul
went
Millsap
on for 2 years, right? You can now add Mike Conley's name to the list of players that will be debated up until the trade deadline as to whether he is the guy you should spend your assets on. The story was first reported yesterday by Adrian Wojnarowski that the Grizzlies, who I think have lost like 9 of their last
23 of their past 30, they're 19 and 28.
And it's time to blow it up.
Yep.
And so Mark Gasol is available, and Mike Conley is available. And I know you and I were on the air together yesterday when this story broke, and I think we both kind of had the same reaction, like, ooh.
Well, he's good.
Mike Conley.
He instantly makes you better. But he's got, he's got an injury history with that Achilles. I think he missed a whole year, and he's 30, going to be 32 years old, and he's got 2 years left on his contract for $67 million at age 32 and 33. I mean, I like him. Like, to say I don't like him as a player would be ridiculous. I like him as a player. He's a really good player. But the reality is that most players decline from 32 on. You very rarely will see a player. The one exception in my lifetime was Steve Nash, who had his best years after age 32. The majority of players start to decline. Could he give you two good years and help get this franchise, turned around a little bit? Probably. But what's the cost besides the $67 million? What do you have to give up? What are they going to want to trade Conley? I don't know that there's going to be a big market for him. Some people think there will be. I don't believe there'll be a big market.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to be a 32-year-old point guard that's due $67 million. He's a good player. He's never been available before, so this is the first time. So did the Suns make a play? My gut feeling is I don't think that they'll make a play for him. I think that they'll stay the course, try to be patient, and wait until free agency and the draft to try to get somebody.
Yeah, Adrian Wojnarowski was on SportsCenter, and I'm kind of reading through some of the quotes, and he kind of alluded to what you said a second ago. Look, there might not be that great of a market for either one of these players,
right?
Given their particular situations, the Grizzlies might be a little disappointed in what they find out there. Now, look, I love Mike Conley. I love Mike Conley. He is, as you say, a winner. He is dedicated. He plays hard. He's a two-way guy. He shoots well. He defends well. If you add him to this roster, you're not a championship team. I don't even know if you're a 50-win team, but you're credible, you're respectable, and you're going to win on a lot of nights. And you're going to send a message to your fan base that the dark days of the last 8 years, we're done with that now. Moving on to a new era. We're getting the switch that Robert Sarver talked about flipping with us, right? Mike Conley signifies the flipping of the switch from the dark days of the last 3 or 4 years to a more victory-minded organization. So for all those reasons, I love him. I really do. But boy, when we reacted to this story yesterday, at first I was gung-ho about it. I thought it was a great idea. The more I thought about it, all of those risks and all of those doubts started creeping into your mind. Like, gosh, he's going to be so old. And is it worth it for a guy who doesn't fit your timeline? And it's almost like when you go to the store, you know, and you want to buy something at the store and you don't, and you get home and you're kind of glad you didn't. Right? I didn't need that. You know, I didn't. Those pair of shoes that I saw that I thought I really wanted and you didn't buy, and you got home. Eh, I got plenty of shoes. I don't need any more shoes.
Yeah, tell that to my wife.
Well, that's a totally different topic, my friend. That's a totally different conversation.
Yeah, she knows that story.
Last night, I kind of had that moment of, you know, on second thought, I don't know if they want Mike Conley.
Because you're tired of losing. It's tough. It's tough the way they are losing. Man, you mentioned Devin Booker's record just a few segments ago. I mean, he's winning at about a 37%, 38% clip. I mean, it's been bad. And you're tired of it, and you're waiting for that player to get you over the hump. But you do want to get a player. You do want to allocate your assets, your money the right way. Don't panic. You know, don't do anything stupid. A lot of teams make stupid mistakes. So you want to allocate your money on a younger point guard that can come in, that can help you, that I'm not saying it's D'Angelo Russell. I like Rozier. I mean, I still like Rozier. You get him for a lot less. I mean, you get him for 13, 14, 15 million. He's got unbelievable athleticism. He's a lot younger. So that's, you know, there are guys out there that you could get that will make your team better.
According to a tweet, a Western Conference team called the Nets asking about D'Angelo Russell's availability in a trade. The Nets brass had a laugh, said no, and hung up the line. And according to the report, it was not the L.A. Lakers. Could it have been
the
Phoenix
Suns?
Could it have been a Western Conference team calling the Nets to ask about D'Angelo Russell? Because didn't Booker tweet at Russell a couple days ago, right? Russell did something over the weekend, was it? Did I see
he also
that, right?
Talked yesterday at Shootaround about how great of a player he is and how great of friends they are.
Yeah, okay. There you go. There you go. So I'm not saying that the Suns were that Western Conference team, but according to reports, a Western Conference team did it. You, and I mentioned this earlier, you very deftly asked James Jones when we had him on the Mike Conley question without saying Mike Conley's name. Because you were talking about older players, and Jones admitted we have to be very careful about adding older veterans.
The speed and pace of the game has increased. So the elite players, you know, there are very few of those guys between the ages of 32 to 35 that maintain a high level and really take a jump. For the most part, our team is all under 20. They're all under 22. So if you try to add someone that's 33, 34 years old with a 22-year-old, it usually just doesn't work. There's too big of a gap. So we're focused on adding veterans, but just not the veterans that are at that declining point.
Conley's going to be 32 later this year. He also, James Jones, said the likeliest way we're going to add to the roster, he didn't mention trade.
Most likely free agency and draft. They're you know, a lot of the teams that have the quality players, they're going for it. And they're, you know, this NBA landscape is different. You have a couple teams up top like Golden State who, you know, they still have the pieces, but at times they look vulnerable. And then you have teams down at the in the mix like the Portlands. You know, you have the teams like Denver that are kind of surging and they're right there. But depending on the moves they make, you know, they could either be in it this year and next year and then be completely out of it in 24 months. So with that type of landscape, operating that type of landscape is very, very hard to project or to say that we'll be able to add a player that fits with us long term via trade.
This time yesterday, I was 100% go get Mike Conley.
Yeah.
Today, I'm 75% go get Mike
Conley. Oh, you still
want
to go get him?
Oh, I still want to go get him. Yeah, I still want to go get him. I'm sick of this.
You got to match. Well, listen,
I know you are too.
Listen,
I know everybody
years,
is.
Listen, the worst place to be in the NBA is like the middle of the pack, right? Like the seventh seed or the eighth seed. That's always the worst. You're not good enough to get. You're not good enough to win it all, to get to the conference finals. You're not bad enough to get a top five pick. That's a tough spot to be in. You'd rather either be really good or really bad. But man, I mean, wouldn't we just kill for one season to be in the eighth seed right now? I mean, would we not? Man, just give me a playoff game. Just give me one. I don't care if we lose by 40. Just give me a playoff game.
Like a canteen of filled with water to a man crawling in the desert.
I just want,
yes.
Give me one. Hey,
give me one sip.
We're the eighth seed. We're going to get slaughtered by Golden State, but I don't care. I just don't care.
One sip of water,
I'll take
man.
It.
There is no denying this season was a tough one. So what is Larry Fitzgerald seeing from the Cardinals to make him want to come back for another year? The top story of the day. We'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show.